Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This Friday morning, hope everybody's having a good day thus far. And actually, snowy Nashville. Hard to believe. 72 degrees on Monday. Flooding on Thursday. Snow on Friday. Gotta love it. Let's bring in Greg McElroy. Always enjoy our conversations with him. He's going to be busy this weekend. Of course, he is a part of a lot of football coverage on ESPN, college football, but also going to be moving into the booth for the XFL that we'll get into in just a bit that debuts this week. And Greg, how you doing?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Well, you just heard the weather forecast. You've been in Nashville. It's a little crazy around here right now.
I spent 6 hours in Atlanta Airport yesterday, so like no rain, sunny, perfect. I'm on board for just about anything, knowing the weather that rolled through the southeast over the last few days. So I'm pretty fired up about what you guys just gave me right there. I might have to head to Nashville Saturday night, maybe hit the strip, and maybe go down to Munbrian for a few. What do you think?
It may be 80 by then, Greg. Who knows?
I love it. Maybe get a tee time over there at Belmead or like Richland, or maybe gall it up a little bit, put the white ball up in the air.
I like it. I like it. By the way, I know that we didn't bring you on to talk about recruiting, but because you follow the SEC, the story that we have just been cracking up at is, how about Will Muschamp's kid going to Georgia? What does that say about the South Carolina program?
It says pretty much what we all know, is that there's nothing guaranteed for Will Muschamp or any coach in the SEC, by the way, beyond 2020. So what do we always tell recruits, right? Like, hey, go where you think you would be happiest as a student. Don't go where you think the coach is going to make you the happiest, right? So yeah. It looks like Will Muschamp is probably applying some of that same logic to kind of encouraging his son for where he should probably be playing his college football.
No doubt about it. I'll tell you what, in the SEC West, it's never lacking drama. Usually we're always trying to figure out whose year is it. Is it Alabama's year? Is this the year that Auburn sneaks into it? Is this the year that LSU rises up? All those have happened here recently, but now there's going to be a lot of attention in the state of Mississippi, and I'm not sure it's for all the right reasons, but man, the two head coaches there in that state, it should be fun at least.
Well, it's not for the wrong reasons, I can tell you that much. I'm pretty fired up about it. I mean, Mike Leach is a guy that recruited me, so I have a good relationship with him, and I was committed to Texas Tech for quite some time. So very familiar with the way he runs the program, and he is a bit of a unique character. There's no denying that. I do think that Mississippi State needed a shot in the arm, and Ole Miss, too, to a certain extent. And I feel like now, not only are they going to at least you hope they're going to be more competitive on the football field. Maybe not quite as competitive as they were when Dan Mullen was pulling the trigger there and when Hugh Freeze was there, but I do think they'll be competitive on the football field. I believe that. But at least now we know that Mississippi's going to be, you know, front page news. And regardless of whether they win or lose, people are going to be talking about what Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach did. And I think that's something that state and both their programs really needed to kind of cement themselves in a bit of a unique way. And I think Oxford's a heck of a place, and I've actually really enjoyed my time in Starkville. So I'm cautiously optimistic about the direction that both programs are heading. It's just a matter of whether or not they can get the players in there and win games quickly enough to make sure they avoid another two-year hire where their guys let go.
Yeah,
and that's what happened with, obviously, Matt Luke and with Joe Moorhead. So, yeah. Like I said, cautiously optimistic, but kind of anxious to see the product on the field before I commit to any evaluation at this point.
If we're having this conversation in 3 years about Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach, who do you think we're talking about more 3 years from now? In other words, I'm basically asking you to project who, somebody's going to be a winner and somebody's going to be a loser. So who do you think has the best shot of us talking more about their program 3 years from now?
Mike Leach. Honestly, like, I have the same doubts as everybody else has too. I don't know for certain that offense is going to work in the SEC. I think it'll work because it's worked everywhere else, but I can't tell you without a tight end and going against the defensive line personnel that he's going to go against on a weekly basis in the SEC. I don't know for certain that those guys are going to hold up, but I have seen him win at places that are really difficult to win. So Lane Kiffin, on the other hand, I think he's a good coach, but I think at this point he's still more of a lightning rod than he is a proven commodity. So I know that Lane Kiffin's going to do everything he can to try to capture attention, but I don't know if it's necessarily at a high-profile program. I don't know if it's necessarily going to turn into unbelievable results on the field. I hope it does. I think like all of us, but I don't know that for certain. Whereas I know Mike Leach will be able to get you 7-8 wins a year. And in that league, that's pretty dang solid.
Talking to Greg McElroy, ESPN, SEC Network, does great work with college football, but we'll also be covering the XFL this year, and we'll get to that in just a second. But I got to bring up LSU and just the tremendous season that they had winning the national championship. And I know I was one of those people, Greg, that I looked at Ed Orgeron, like him. He's a great quote, great interview, but just didn't think he was going to get the job done, and he proved us all wrong. Now, he had a pretty darn good quarterback to help him along the way, but what was it about the buy-in with Ed O that worked for that team?
I wish I could explain it. I don't think I was critical of the hire.
Yeah.
And I've been around Ed O. He recruited me at Ole Miss. Like I've known Ed O for 15 years. So, and my thing is, we're talking about one of the top jobs in college football to me. I've always felt like LSU is one of the best. Just with no in-state competition, a lot of incredible players, access to the Southeast and to the state of Texas. Like, I've always thought that that's a top five job in America. I've always felt that way. So when he got the job, I was like, oh, look at his track record. I mean, golly, I mean, I feel like, I know he's from Louisiana, that makes sense, but what has he done to earn this job outside of doing a pretty good job in an interim situation? And honestly, I was dead wrong. Not only has he kind of invigorated the program, but he's kind of captivated an audience throughout the Southeast, and in the state of Louisiana, he can walk on water. So I think then that's huge, too, is having a fan base that closely associates with the coach. And I think that's been probably never better than what we see at both Clemson and at LSU. I think Dabo resonates with the fan base at Clemson, and clearly Ed O resonates with the fan base at LSU, and he's easy to support. So couldn't be happier for him and the fact that he has his dream job and is making the most of this opportunity, because it's rare that you get a second chance at this level, especially when things go as poorly as they did at Ole Miss. And for him to not only turn LSU around, but win a national championship in such short order and recruit the way he's recruiting, hire the coaches around him that he's hired, I mean, it's nothing short of remarkable.
So, Greg, you'll be on the call tomorrow. The XFL makes its debut on ABC, Seattle taking on D.C. alongside Steve Levy, Tom Luganville, and Diana Russini. You can see that 1 o'clock Central Time here in Nashville. I'm curious of your perspective on this league, because as someone that you won a national championship, you had a very good college career, but then you go and you have the cup of coffee in the NFL. What would a league like this have meant for your playing career?
I would have played. And I think I would have absolutely played in the XFL or tried to play in the XFL, because I was a fringe player. I was a guy on the roster in the NFL that was somewhere between 40 and 53. And, there's no shame in that. You're still one of the best players in the world if you're on the roster and you're between somewhere between 40 and 53. But all those guys that are between 40 and 53 on a 53-man roster are interchangeable. And what this does, and what the XFL does, is it provides you actual reps. I would go to practice, y'all, literally, in the NFL, in training camp. I would go to practice because they've shortened practices. There's no more two-a-days. They've made it easier on the veteran players with the new CBA that they rolled out in 2011 after the lockout. They wanted to basically prolong veteran players' careers, and that was a big talking point. But what they've done is they've eliminated opportunity for young players to develop and to get actual repetitions. Now, they're not referring to the XFL as a developmental league, and I don't think we need to refer to it as that, because it's going to be a standalone. I think it's going to be very, very successful, full disclosure, because there are a lot of really, really good players that are on the bottom of an NFL roster that would much rather take the bird in the hand and play in a spring league in 10 games than grind it out on a practice squad where you're making less money and not getting any actual repetition towards developing your craft. So I, for one, would have played. And I wish this league existed 5 years ago because I would have teed it up. And I think I would have been a much better NFL player had I been given the opportunity to actually start and play more than two or three games a year in the preseason. So I'm a little remorseful about the timing, but I couldn't be happier to be associated with it, you know, as a broadcaster.
Well, and I think what's so interesting about it, you look at the first XFL and some other leagues that have come along the way, that they had this mindset of, oh, we're going to beat the NFL. We're going to give you an alternative to the NFL. And I don't think they've taken this approach. Vince McMahon has put football people in place. You have some pretty big name coaches that are a part of this. And while you said it's not a development league, it's a standalone, I do think that everybody understands that it can create opportunity for some of these guys to move on to the NFL, to make a 53-man roster, and then open the door for somebody else to come in and play in the XFL.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and I think the league model is smart, and they're prioritizing quarterbacks, and quarterbacks are making a bunch of money, and really, really good money, comparable to that of an NFL rookie salary. So you're going to be able to attract guys on merit alone, but also, when you really take things into consideration, and there might be guys that... And there are guys in the XFL right now that had NFL opportunities that turned down NFL opportunities for a known commodity and being associated with the XFL. Landry Jones is one of those guys. So it's a shorter season. It's more predictable as far as whether or not you're going to make a roster. And I think it's attractive to guys that still have opportunities to play in the NFL. Of course, your dream is always to play in the NFL and secure a big deal and make a bunch of money. But there's clearly a place for the XFL and clearly a place to be, you know, highly successful if given the opportunity to play in the XFL.
What do you think about some of the rules that they're implementing in, as a quarterback, the double forward pass? I think that's going to be interesting.
I think the rules are smart. It's not going to be gimmicky, but I like the idea of encouraging people to go for it on fourth down, which means they're really, really penalizing touchbacks. Which means if you're in plus territory, you're probably going to go for it because you don't want to kick the ball into the end zone and let the other team get it at the 35-yard line. I think that's really smart. I think the way they've reinvented the kickoff is really smart to encourage kickoffs and to minimize the type of high-speed collisions. So that's really good. The double forward passes, I think we're spending a lot of time on it. I mean, how often are we going to see double forward passes? Once a game, maybe. But I think the kickoff and the extra point, the tiered extra point, makes for new strategy, and I think there's a lot of encouraging aspects to that.
So as we wrap this up, Greg, so obviously you're saying good things, which we want to hear. You think that, and I said this before we brought you on, their biggest obstacle and their hurdles out of the gates, or at least in the first season, is just gaining the trust, earning the trust from the fans out there, media, whatever, that it's going to last because we've gone through these leagues and they come and they go quicker than, you know, a blink of an eye. And so you think 3 years from now we're still talking about this league?
Yes. Okay. I think it exists. I think there's a place for it. So clearly the focus groups that they've used tell you that there's an appetite for football. And I think to a certain extent, too, this thing's well-resourced. And guess what? You know where to find us.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to be on every Saturday at 2 o'clock Eastern on ABC. Every Saturday. And I think some of the previous leagues – they didn't have their ducks in a row as far as when we can watch the game. Like, for instance, I watched the AAF last year. But I never knew where to find it. Am I on the NFL Network? Am I on TNT?
Mm-hmm.
Am I on CBS Sports? Am I on CBS? Never knew where to find it. So I think having broadcast windows where you know what to expect is going to make it a little bit easier for people to comprehend. And I think you'll recognize way, way, way more players than you probably anticipate. So I think there's an appetite for it, and I think there's a place for it. And I expect the quality of play to be really good, and that's really what it's all about, is how good is the quality of play. If the play is terrible, it's not going to be good. But knowing the players on the roster, I feel pretty good about what we can expect from the teams that we're going to see here in the weeks to come.
Well said. Hope you're right. And we'll certainly be checking it out starting this weekend for sure. We always enjoy the visit. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Phil. Sorry I'm out of breath. I'm walking around D.C.
You're good.
It's all good. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg.
See y'all.
Greg McElroy, ESPN, SEC Network, and now the XFL. And he's going to be in the booth with whom, did you say?
Steve Levy,
wow.
And Tom Luginbill, and also Diana Russini.
Wow. There you go. You just heard it. Saturdays at 2.
Yeah.
You know there'll be a game.
Yeah, and then on Sunday, ESPN has the 5 o'clock game, or the 4 o'clock game, Tom Hart, Joey Galloway, Pat McAfee, that team. So
we'll come back with more of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.